Welcome to Damn Good Movie Memories with your host, Brian Davis. This podcast is the cure for your long commute and super boring workday.
Matthew, the summer's over. I want to hear your plan.
I guess my plan is to keep working at Suncoast Video until I figure out what I want to do with my life.
We just think you have such potential. You could be an astronaut.
Oh, problem solved. I'll just be an astronaut. You are not going to believe who was just in here. Tori Frederiking.
Don't I know you? It's me, Tori.
Matt Franklin.
Where do you work?
I'm at Goldman Sachs.
So, are you going to Kyle Masterson's party tonight?
Amazing! You're going to trick her into liking you. And then you're going to be like, it's me!
I can't show up in this car.
Why not?
The Frederiking does not roll in a kumquat.
Take a ride at these lights up here.
We're just going to borrow it.
It's going to come!
What's up?
Tell him where you're from.
Straight out of Compton. A brother with his finger on the trigger. But once I take out, my rep gets bigger. I'm the ruthless killer, and you know this.
What do you do anyway? I thought you went to MIT. I work at Suncoast Video.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Right out of Compton.
Let's do this.
Occupado.
Actually, it's my friend Francis. He wants to watch. It's not negotiable.
I'm going to try this.
Whatever you do, it's what you're going to be. And I just don't know what I want to be. Yet.
Will you marry me?
No!
Hell yeah!
Marriage is a big life decision.
Big you life decision? Yeah. At least I'm making stuff. You're so scared you can't choose anything.
I suck at this. I just hit rock bottom, so don't mind me.
Oh, I love this song. I love this song.
Do you want to dance?
Why can't you give yourself one night of enjoyment? Just one night? Put a little relish on your hot dog!
Tori, there's something I should tell you.
Couldn't be worse.
It couldn't be any worse.
Put your hands in the air!
I was wrong. Now it couldn't be any worse.
Matthew?
Wow, wrong again.
Hey there, it's Brian Davis, and for this week's episode, we're going to cover the movie Take Me Home Tonight from 2011. The studio was Imagine Entertainment, and the release date was March 4th, 2011. The running time, 97 minutes, and it was rated R. The budget, $19 million, and the box office, well, it only took in $7 million, making it the 148th ranked movie of 2011. Rotten Tomatoes gives it 28% rotten from 114 reviews. Their consensus is, it has a charming sweetness about it, but Take Me Home Tonight is neither funny nor original to live up to the comedies it evokes. Roger Ebert at the time, well, he didn't like it either. He gave it 1.5 out of 4 stars. He writes, I followed the Darwin Awards carefully. Those are the mentions given out on the internet every year of people whose deaths may have improved the species by removing them from the gene pool. Many of the characters in Take Me Home Tonight might make a contribution in that way. He then mentions a bunch of plot points, but that's my job, so let's skip ahead. Take Me Home Tonight must have been made with people who had a great deal of nostalgia for the 1980s, a relatively unsung decade. More power to them. The movie unfortunately gives them no dialogue, expanding them into recognizable human beings. They speak entirely in plot points and punchlines and seem to be motivated only by lust, greed, and ego. Well, we all are. But few bring to this motivation so little intelligence and wit. And that's the end of Ebert's abbreviated review. Look, the bottom line here, Ebert didn't dig the film and doesn't think much of the 80s, and that's fair enough. I was a child of the 80s, and he was middle-aged during the decade. I do have nostalgia for fun, simple films, and Take Me Home Tonight is just that. All right, let's get into the main cast. Topher Grace plays Matt Franklin. By 2011, Grace was already 5 years past his best-known role, which is Eric Foreman on the hit TV series That 70s Show. As for film roles, he had a major part as Venom in the Tobey Maguire era of Spider-Man. It was the final installment of that era and panned by many. He also starred in Win a Date with Tad Hamilton and the movie In Good Company. Anna Faris plays Wendy Franklin. Now, she made a name for herself in the parody film series Scary Movie as Sind and cemented herself as a comedic actress. Some other notable films for Faris included The Hot Chick with Rob Schneider and Rachel McAdams, Lost in Translation with Bill Murray and Scarlett Johansson, Waiting with Ryan Reynolds, Just Friends, also with Ryan Reynolds, My Super Ex-Girlfriend with Uma Thurman and Luke Wilson, The House Bunny, and then did voiceover work in animated films like Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs and Alvin and the Chipmunks. She was also in Brokeback Mountain. All right, Dan Fogler plays Barry. Now, I covered Fogler's early career in the Good Luck Chuck episode with Dane Cook and Jessica Alba. It was also one of Lindsay's favorites. Check that episode out. And Fogler continues to appear in films and TV shows. Teresa Palmer plays Tori. The Australian-born actress began her film career in her native country before moving to the United States in 2006, and her debut being in the horror film The Grudge 2. She would continue to have supporting roles until Take Me Home Tonight. Chris Pratt plays Kyle. Now, Pratt, of course, would go on to be the most famous of this entire cast from this film, but in 2011, he was still on the rise. He was best known for supporting roles in TV shows like Everwood, The O.C., and Parks and Recreation. 3 years later, he would break out as a star from the Guardians of the Galaxy franchise and the reboot of Jurassic Park. All right, let's get into the film. It opens to the song Video Killed the Radio Star by the Buggles. The year is 1988. And we are immediately introduced to Matt, that's Topher Grace, and his best friend Barry, played by Dan Fogler, and Matt's sister Wendy, played by Anna Faris. Matt works at kind of a hybrid store of both records and videos, even though he just graduated from MIT. In a typical movie trope that always seems to work, Matt still longs after his high school crush Tori, played by Teresa Palmer. But he doesn't have the confidence to ask her out. This lack of confidence is also the reason he's still working at a music store after graduation.
Tori Fredericking is back. Her parents sent her to Europe for the summer as a graduation gift, but she's back, and I have 3 confirmed sightings of her in this mall.
Matt, I don't care about Tori Fredericking. I care about her age to perfection.
Man.
Daddy like you.
Barry, you gotta focus here, man. I'm talking about the Fredericking.
You have the focus, okay? That was in the 10th grade. You got truth or dared into a closet with the girl.
It was literally 7 minutes in heaven. When we got out of that closet, she told everyone at the party that I was an amazing kisser. She did.
But you didn't kiss her. You spent 7 minutes shitting your pants and not making a move.
I know, that's what makes her so fucking awesome. When I got out of the closet, everyone started ragging on me for choking. She lied and said that I was an amazing kisser.
Pretty stellar move, huh?
To the max.
Oh my God, I've been hearing this story since we shared our mother's uterus. Oh, and by the way, did you even have the balls to ask her out after that? I can't
No,
recall.
But only because I never had my in. Don't do this. Hey, come on. How do you always know what I'm gonna say? Fuck!
You guys are really freaking me out with that twin shit.
Now, Barry is your typical lovable loser friend who is the polar opposite of Matt in that he has far too much confidence for being such a screw-up. Barry works at a luxury car dealership.
Watch and learn, brother. I'm going in.
And I have the tiger, buddy.
I have the tiger.
I don't like how this looks.
No, no good.
So you like music?
I hate it.
Oh, not the book, Barry. Oh, no, not The Art of War. Oh, God.
You ever read Sun Tzu's Art of War? I have. It's amazing. I'm giving my number. I'll loan it to you. Get back to me at a later date of your choosing, and we'll have a bottle of chilled wet Zen. Holy shit. I'm free on Saturday.
Yes, Barry fell into the shelves and like a stack of dominoes, they all fell over. He's definitely going to be alone on Saturday. We then get the opening credits to Hungry Like a Wolf by Duran Duran. While working at the store, which is located inside a mall, Matt sees Tori walk in. He runs out the back and takes off his work vest and then re-enters the store like he's a customer so that Tori doesn't know that he's working there.
Excuse me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hey, don't I know you?
Well, I don't think so.
No, I do. I know you from somewhere.
Hmm.
Oh,
You went to Sherman, didn't you?
I did.
Yes.
Oh, that must be it.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, weird.
I actually think you're in my homeroom.
What?
Yeah. You're the really smart kid.
Oh.
You won the attendance award every year.
Yeah.
It's me, Tori.
Matt Franklin.
I knew you from somewhere. Cool.
So you did, what are you up to?
Well, I went to Duke, and I graduated with honors.
Oh.
Yeah, and then I got awarded this internship at Drexel Burnham, so, well, I moved back. Oh, it's an investment bank.
I know what it is.
Oh, I didn't mean to.
No, it's fine. Just, I'm in the same business, so.
Really?
Yeah.
Where do you work?
I'm at Goldman Sachs.
Oh, that's funny. I didn't know they had an office in Los Angeles.
I know, that's weird. A lot of people don't. I'm in Japanese takeovers.
Oh. So, are you going to Kyle Masterson's party tonight?
I don't know.
Oh. You should totally go. It was pretty good last year. Where it is, someone's gonna ride the ball tonight. Where are they?
Weird.
Hello?
No, just take it. Just take it. Nope, there we go. I'll pay for it when this jackass gets back.
Great, thank you.
So maybe I'll see you tonight. Terry?
Tori.
Right, Tori, sorry.
Mary Nathan?
Dude, you are not gonna believe who was just in here. Tori Fredericking.
Bottom line it for me.
I think she was flirting with me.
I honestly got that vibe.
That's highly unlikely. Can you do better for me, boss?
She said I should totally go to Kyle Masterson's party tonight.
This is it. I finally have my in.
I see.
We're going to that party.
I'm finally getting her phone number.
Yeah, that's all you got for me?
Oh, yeah, right. What do you know about investment banking?
Nothing.
Currencies?
Nothing? That's unacceptable. You gotta bend a bit here more, boss. This guy just had another baby.
Oh, you're trying to close a sale. Vagina, 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 vagina.
Good luck. We'll pick up at 5.
Fine. No, I will. I'll take it out of my own goddamn salary. Fine. No, thank you. It's a pleasure. Such a fucking pleasure. I'm sorry that you had to witness that, Steven. That bastard's not going to budge, but off the top of my head, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to knock $3,000 off.
Your boss is standing right behind you. And I'm not buying your bullshit, Barry. Or a sedan.
Now, Barry's boss? Well, that's played by Bob Odenkirk, of course. Famous from Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad. Barry is immediately fired, and we see him walking out of the dealership with a box of his belongings. Barry decides to burn his bridges by cursing at his boss and then chucking his box of junk at the front entrance. He then runs away and jumps into Matt and Wendy's car. We then cut to that night at the family dinner as Barry gets drunk on red wine.
So, Dad, somebody's gonna ride the ball tonight.
Darling, nobody rode that thing when I was a kid, and nobody's gonna ride it tonight. How's your dad doing, Barry?
Well, his parole got pushed back about 6 months, so he's pretty upset about that.
No, I still don't understand why they let you go.
7 years of my life, Libby. They stole my youth.
Well, look at it this way, Barry. At least you went for it. You realized a goal, you rolled up your sleeves, and you applied yourself.
Well, I see the traditional evening's torture is in full swing.
Matthew, we had a deal. You said, just give me the summer to figure things out. Well, guess what? The summer's over. I want to hear your plan.
Dad, I guess my plan is to keep working at Suncoast until I figure out what I really want to do with my life.
Why don't you just get an engineering job until you figure it out?
Honey, we just think you have such potential. I mean, you could be anything. You could be an astronaut.
Oh, problem solved. I'll just be an astronaut.
Matthew, I didn't give a quarter of my savings to MIT so you could work at the mall. I'll see you all in the morning. I gotta go to work.
Matt!
Are you okay?
I applied to Cambridge for my master's.
Holy shit! You finally did it!
I don't want to open it.
Why not?
Because I'm scared, dipshit.
Oh,
You want me to help you?
No, no.
Matt, no. Knock it off.
Well, I think you do. Wendy. You're going to England.
I don't know. I don't even know if I'd go.
Why?
I don't know if Kyle would come or not. He would take possession of the condo on Tuesday.
Well,
his dad's putting in
I mean, look, he'll visit. He needs to experience a new language. Open it.
I just applied to see if I could get in.
Okay, Wendy, you know that I hate giving you compliments, right?
Yeah.
I've read your short stories. They're amazing.
I know.
Open it. Open it. Open it. Fucking open it.
No!
Okay.
No, I'm not going to. No, not now. No, I just want to have fun tonight. Matt, don't tell anyone. Promise.
You can trust me. I'm a Goldman Sachs man.
Good luck with that.
Okay, here we go. Nelson Mandela, Purple Rain, windsurfing.
Windsurfing?
What am I doing? Whoa. I'll never get this girl.
Hey. I don't want to hear that talk tonight. Okay? How long do I know you?
Since fifth grade.
Since fifth grade. That's right. You're whipping it real good now. Look at you. You're the smartest guy I know. Your acne is all cleared up.
Yeah.
Hey, you've had sex now.
Yeah.
I'm going to be with you every step of the way. You're going to do this, Matt. And you're going to do it well. You're going to get this broad's number.
We then meet Wendy's boyfriend, Kyle, played by Chris Pratt, who's throwing a big Labor Day party that everyone's talking about. He's your typical jock yuppie who you love to hate from those 80s teen movies. You know, the roles that William Zabka made so famous. We then get a montage of everyone getting ready to go to the party with Kickstart My Heart from Motley Crue playing. And this is where music nerds will get pissed. Since this film is supposed to take place in 1988, why are they playing a song that wasn't even released yet? Yeah, I personally don't care, but it's close enough. The album came out a year later, but I get it why people do care. Matt, Wendy, and Barry head to the party, and Barry decides he needs to make this a night to remember.
Oh, shit. I can't show up in this car.
Why not?
The Fredericking does not roll in a kumquat. Whoa, that's my graduation bottle from MIT.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, I was saving that for something special.
It's kind of special that I've never drunk this much this fast before.
Hey, listen, you will get through this.
Hey! I got fired today, okay? Fired. I didn't go to screw all day and drink all night college like you twin bastards did. So tonight I'm catching up. Take a right at these lights up here.
Why?
Take a right! I'm sorry.
I'm having no part of this.
Yeah, Barry, I'm a little fuzzy on how we're gonna get away with this.
I have a set of keys. I know all the alarm codes. It's almost perfectly legitimate.
Almost.
You just honk the horn if anyone shows up.
Roger that.
Come on.
Listen, Barry, I really don't want to spend tonight in the L.A. County Jail giving some white supremacist a crying blowjob.
That's not gonna happen, Matt. There's no way you cry. Look. Mike, the prick bastard sales manager who fired me keeps the keys to the 560 SL in his prick bastard desk.
Come on.
I don't know, man. We're gonna bring it back later. Nobody's gonna know the difference, okay?
I don't know. What if someone sees us? I think there might be security cameras.
Matt, stop thinking, okay? Tonight, we're just doing.
Shut off the alarm.
For real. They changed the alarm codes, man. Those bastards didn't trust me.
I wonder why.
Oh,
my God, holy fuck, this is great! You pussy! Get back in the game!
Come on!
Test drive.
What the hell?
Holy shit!
Stole a car!
Holy shit!
It stole a car!
Very, holy f- Unbelievable.
Woo! I've never driven the 560 SL before, Matt. They never let me. Man,
maybe you should take it back.
No. You need this car tonight, Matt. You need this car tonight.
What's up?
Tell them where you're from.
Straight out of So Barry steals the Mercedes and it's off to the party. By the way, you might have missed it from the clip. When the alarm went off, Matt raced out of the dealership trying to get into Wendy's car, but she locked him out, telling him to get back into the game. They arrive at the party. It's your typical raging house party you'd find often in the 80s movies. Before going in, Matt opens the glove compartment and finds a baggie full of cocaine. Barry snatches that up immediately. The highlight of this party every year is to ride inside this giant metal ball when it's pushed down a hill. Think of it as an even more dangerous version of rolling inside of a tire down a hill.
Sunshine!
Hammer fans!
Hey! How's it going, how points?
Hey, did you two manage to fuck each other yet?
What? Oh, shit, Matt! Matt Franklin! And, your buddy you're always hanging out with. What's up? You never make these things, man.
So that's the ball.
In person, live, via satellite.
No, it's not via anything.
Yeah,
right here.
You get the point.
I don't think he knows what via means.
Or
Doctor, satellite.
Right now. I hate you.
Wendy, get up here. Come on, baby. Oh. Get your hot ass up here and give me a kiss.
Yeah. Huh? Careful.
It's amazing.
Hi.
Oh, sorry. Okay, Matt. Share with everybody.
Nothing.
Go ahead. What? What? What were you saying?
This looks suicidal, man.
Come on. You just don't like it because the ball represents balls, which you don't have.
Kyle.
Oh, is this one of those metaphors?
Matt?
Wendy, no. I got this one. Yeah. Yeah. That's a metaphor.
So the ball is balls.
Yeah.
Good one.
That is a metaphor. I totally got him.
Matt and Barry make their way inside the house, and Barry is nervous, feeling that he's just another dork in high school. So he decides to walk around alone. He leaves Matt alone, who ends up getting a rude awakening about his Goldman Sachs lie.
Ah. Good life.
Nice shades, asshole.
No sign of the Frederick King?
Yeah. Man, I feel like I'm in 10th grade again. I'm gonna put these on ice.
Hey, Franklin. Down here, Hansello.
Ah, fuck! Carlos, what happened to you?
67 times 365.
You're in a wheelchair.
Answer.
24,455. What's up?
I've been really lazy. Nah, I'm just kidding. I got hit by a drunk driver right after graduation, but don't cry for me, Argentina. It's not so bad. I get better parking, tons of pussy. I mean, I have stronger opinions about hills now, but whatever. So what have you been doing, building jetpacks?
No, I work at Goldman Sachs.
No, you don't. No way you work there.
No, I do. I work in Asian takeovers.
That's funny, because you know where I work? Goldman fucking Sachs. You don't work there.
You work at Goldman Sachs?
You bet your legs I do. Think I'm gonna let this shit hold me back? You don't need to walk to speculate currencies. I said you don't need to walk to speculate currencies! I'm doing what I want. I'm following my dream. Eat it.
I thought you wanted to play baseball.
Fuck you, Franklin.
Look, do you know Tori Fredericking?
Yeah, I know her.
Well, if you see her, could you show her this? And tell her I work at Goldman Sachs?
Wow, that's pathetic, dude. Probably not gonna work either. We don't have an LA office. Everybody knows that, who has half a sack, spelled with a K.
Well, just, you know, don't rat me out.
Yeah, I'll think about it. If I'm not getting laid. When I'm getting laid, I don't think about much else. Anyway, kind of getting bummed out talking to you. What do you do, anyway? I thought you went to MIT.
I work at Suncoast Video.
Wow. Congratulations. Mom and Dad must be psyched. I'm gonna get out of here. Check this out, moonwalk. Could you guys move? I'm trying to fucking party here.
Now, Carlos is played by the stand-up comedian Dimitri Martin, who has a few hilarious comedy albums, so check those out. Barry can't loosen up enough, so what's a good way to mellow out? Yeah, a bag of cocaine.
Hi. I can't handle this right now. I want to do some of the coke.
What do you mean you can't handle this?
I want to do the coke.
No, what can't you handle?
Not doing the coke.
Okay, Barry, we're not cocaine people. A, my dad's a cop. B, I'm defining my gray area, which I'm pretty sure doesn't include hard narcotics.
Give me the bag.
No.
Give me the bag and I'll get the car keys.
Okay. All right, just take it easy, Scarface.
This one here is an alarm.
After Barry runs off, we hear the familiar sounds of Kim Carnes' classic Betty Davis eyes as Tori makes her entrance with her two friends. Tori runs into her high school boyfriend, while dejected Matt watches from afar. Matt does eventually make his way into the conversation, and he's super awkward and fails miserably. He slinks away, feeling even worse about himself. In the meantime, Barry is motivating himself to do some coke, which is hilarious to watch as he gets it all over his face, and he thinks he landed a bag of fake shit. Well, 5 seconds later, it hits him, and he's out on the dance floor to the sounds of Safety Dance by Men Without Hats.
Hey, you're hot! And we can act like we come from out of this world. I'm growling at you! You hear me? I was growling at you like a lion in the jungle! I'm Barry! Confirmation, yeah, you're hot!
What?
Hello! We can go red sash! Shoulder pads, zipper. You are tall, but I can still hear you. Whoa, you're gonna hurt somebody, man. You're gonna take someone's eye out.
That guy's my boyfriend.
I hope he screws better than he dances, huh? Wait a minute. Oh shit, he's about to do the splits. Now I can see the face. There he goes. He's got no testes left. He's got no testes left. Come on. Who's got a watermelon?
Yo. Yo, go find your own date, boy.
Oh, I got my own date, boy. I think that you used to know. What? Yeah. What's up? You wanna dance? Let's go. Let's see what you got, boy.
While Barry is now in a showdown with a guy dressed like he was an extra on Breakin', Matt gets a second chance with Tori, who is bored to death by the conversation of her yuppie ex-boyfriend. While Matt tries to be not so nervous around Tori, word spreads quickly that Barry is now in a dance-off with the Breaking Guy. First, Breaking Guy dances to What You Need by NXS. And because cocaine is a hell of a drug, Barry hilariously does his thing and doesn't care how stupid he looks. Barry wins the dance-off by crane-kicking the dude in the nuts. Not once, but twice. After the fracas, one of the girls ends up choking on a piece of food. Matt, thinking it's Tori who's choking, grabs her and tries to give her the Heimlich. Tori is pissed and weirded out, but Matt finally admits he's nervous around her and forgives him and relaxes around her. They end up dancing to Everybody Have Fun Tonight by Wang Chung. However, Kyle stops the music to make an important announcement.
Ladies and gentlemen, if I can get your attention, please. Hey, here we are. First of all, I want to say thank you to everybody for chilling with me at my very last Labor Day party. You know, a lot of things have changed, it seems like, since we graduated. Trevor, talking to you. What's up with that fucking earring, dude? Right? We are changing, and we're moving on. We're going our separate ways. And some of us are going our separate ways together. You all know Wendy. Wendy Franklin here. Honey, get on up here.
What are you doing?
Round of applause. What is he doing?
I think that she is one hell of a chick, because she turned a lump of coal like me into a diamond. From all the pressure she put me under. Oh! Oh, wait, there's something in my pocket.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Wendy, will you marry me?
No.
Hell yeah!
This leads to a party montage with Come On Eileen playing. While this is going on, Barry is off by himself as the initial cocaine high is starting to wear off, but he gets a jolt of confidence from Ashley, played by Michelle Trachtenberg, who you'll remember from Eurotrip, and she approaches him.
Hey.
Hey.
Look, I know everyone's making fun of you, but I just wanted to say I really love what you did out there tonight.
Who's making fun of me?
Don't worry about it. Your dance was cool. It was like anti-dancing. It's like a big screw you to all them conformist assholes.
I'm glad you liked it.
You didn't give a shit about any of their shit, you know?
Did you want to get naked?
Wow. That was fast. Even for me, and I get naked all the time. Come find me later.
Matt isn't sure what it's the best idea for Wendy to marry Kyle, so he decides to pull her aside and tell her so.
Hey, can I talk to you for a sec? I don't want to say this, but I really feel
then
like it'd be worse if
don't.
I didn't. Don't marry him.
Oh, Christ.
The two of you, it's like you don't fit. I don't think he can make you happy.
Well, I already am happy, so you're wrong, so leave me alone.
Then why don't you open that envelope from Cambridge?
Because I hate rejection,
Matt. Oh, no, come on. You know you got in. And you know he doesn't want you to go. He's already holding you back.
Kyle would support any decision that I wanted to make as long as I was happy.
Okay, then why didn't you tell him you applied? I mean, he's gonna be your husband, right? I mean, aren't you supposed to be honest with him about everything?
Oh, you're lecturing me about honesty, Mr. Goldman Sachs? The only reason you're saying all this stuff is because you're jealous. You're jealous that I have a life and you don't.
You're not gonna have a life. You're just gonna play a supporting role in Kyle's life. That's why you said yes, right? So it'll all be wrapped up in a little bow. Wendy, marriage is a big life decision.
Oh, big life decisions? At least I'm making some, asshole. You're so scared you can't choose anything. Not a girl, not a job, anything. And you're just gonna sit there in your little smarty pants fantasy bubble dreaming about Tori Frederking when you know that she's unobtainable.
That's not true.
You can't get her, and you know it. So there's really no risk at all, is there? It's bullshit, Matt, and you know it.
I was wrong. You're gonna look great in an apron.
Tori and her friends decide the party is played out and decide to go to another one in Beverly Hills. Matt decides to make his move.
Is that your car?
What? Oh.
Wow, that is so cherry. You already make enough money for a car like this?
Well, nobody stopped me when I drove it off the lot. This is Barry, a dancer.
So, are you guys going to that party in Beverly Hills?
Yeah, we were thinking about it. You?
Oh, yeah.
Where is that party again?
Well, you know what? I know the way, so I should just ride with you.
What? Oh, my God, you slut.
Oh, my God.
Oh my gosh, you slut!
Look, you gotta ride with her friends.
Really? Okay.
Are you smoking now?
When it rains, it pours. Am I right, brother? Come on, punch it up, punch. And squeeze real tight. And then the fan comes up, bam! And then you go like this.
Now get off of me.
Hey. I guess I'm riding with you guys.
I don't know.
I have cocaine on me.
Can I ride in the back with you, Barry?
Yeah.
Well, this will be fun. We'll be all bankers at this party, so we will know a ton of people.
Oh. Great.
Again, cocaine is a hell of a drug, so it's off to Beverly Hills. Tori opens up to Matt a bit on the ride over.
Swear to God, the only reason I got offered a full-time position at Drexel is because he wants to see my boobs.
Really? What about your friend's boobs?
Well, he's already seen them.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. You see, that's the problem. Boob power recedes once revealed. He has it and won't see mine, so I retain the boob power.
I'd contact Matt.
You know, we always know when you guys look.
Not always.
No, we do. It's true. Go ahead, give it a shot. I'll look away.
Okay.
Now.
Wow. Whoa. That was good.
Pretty good. Now.
Wow. Ah. That's unbelievable. Best of seven?
Now, laughter is always a good thing. While Kyle's party was your traditional teen house party, the next party looks like Gordon Gekko from Wall Street is hosting. The house is full of sterile modern designs of some valets, a sushi bar, and a wall-to-wall yuppies talking finance. We also meet Tori's pervert boss, played by Michael Ian Black, who tries to get in her pants, but Matt saves the day.
You know, Matt doesn't seem like a Goldman Sachs man to me, Tori. Most of those blowhards can't shut up about work. No, seriously, Matt, tell me. Tell me the department. Let me do the math. I know a lot of people over there.
What department?
Yeah, Matt. What do you do?
Do you guys know yen? I mean, you know, say yen gets transferred from Mr. Nariata's bank in Tokyo on a Monday, and it lands in Rome. So what's 0.467 times 32? 149.5 lira, right? Wham, Mr. Roma takes that, flips it over Mr. Queen Elizabeth. So what's 149.5 divided by 22.3? 6 pounds British sterling and 78 pence, right? Wham, he takes it, flips it over to Mr. USA Today before opening bell. So what's 6.78 divided by 1.68? It's 3.99 big bad greenbacks. And guess who Mr. Yankee Doodle Dandy wires it to over the international dateline? Mr. Nariata. How much is that yen worth now? 1.012, 1.2% more in one day. 1.2% times 365 days. I mean, I'll do the math, but it's a lot of blowfish. So that's what I do, Pete.
That good old MIT degree came in very handy. Plus, after Matt talks about a sexual harassment lawsuit that he made up on the spot, Tori's boss takes the hint and leaves her alone. Barry, in the meantime, gets hit on by a stunning redhead named Trish, played by Angie Everhart, who asks Barry if he has any coke on him. Lucky gal, of course Barry does! And they make their way to the bathroom. But Barry gets a surprise when her male companion also joins them, and Barry quickly finds out the guy is the third wheel who likes to watch Trish with other guys, which freaks out Barry, but not enough to leave. Of course, things get freaky and crazy, and Barry races out with his pants around his ankles. Back to Matt and Tori, Tori admits that she hates her job and fake finance lifestyle. This relieves Matt, but will he admit that he's not working at Goldman Sachs?
God, it's like, who lives in this neighborhood, right?
Yeah.
Actually, hang on one sec. How do you feel about a little bit of yard hopping? Come on, let's get out of here.
Oh my God!
I don't think anyone's home.
Really?
Welcome to your new house.
How are you like this? No one else I work with is this much fun. I can't believe you're a banker.
Yeah, me neither. Oh, shit.
What?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Yeah. Oh, we're doing this.
I'm not getting on that thing.
Oh, yeah.
That was really smooth.
Come on.
No, I'm not.
I know you want to.
I'll watch safely from down here. Thank you.
Tori, tonight we're not thinking. We're doing. Back to me. Do you remember when we played Truth or Dare at Lisa Mandrikos' house? I think, like, you and I got dared into 7 minutes in heaven.
No, doesn't ring a bell. But, you know, maybe if we played again.
You want to play Truth or Dare?
Truth or Dare.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, Truth.
If I was your high school crush, how come you never asked me out?
You know, I just never had my in.
Your in?
Yeah, you know, the right moment. You know, the perfect confluence of events. Where No, I've been telling myself that since high school. And it's bullshit. I had plenty of opportunities to ask you out. I was afraid. Truth. If I had asked you out in high school, would you have said yes?
That's not fair. If I had known then what I know
Tori,
now, I...
Come on.
No. I probably wouldn't have said yes. Why do you look so relieved?
Because I am. My biggest regret is not having the balls to ask you out in high school. And now I know that it wouldn't have made a difference. Besides which, if I had, and you had rejected me, I would have despised you, and I wouldn't be sitting here with you right now having the... having the best night of my entire life.
Dare. Come over here and bring your lips as close to mine as possible without touching.
Truth, are you messing with me right now?
Dare. Come and find out.
That good?
No, not good. A little closer. That's it. What's that sound?
I think that's my heart beating, like, really fast.
Dare me to make it go faster.
Double dare you.
After jumping on the giant trampoline at another person's house, Matt finally gets to make out with the girl of his dreams. But will Matt finally come clean with her? And if he does, how will she react? Well, you're just going to have to watch the final 20 minutes and find out. And what about Wendy and Kyle? Well, that's another question that needs to be answered. But again, watch the movie. So fans of 80s teen movies should enjoy this film. And of course, fans of that 70s show will likely dig the film as well. So check it out. All right, there were a few deleted scenes. One is called Picking Blinds. Wendy crank calls Matt at the video store while she picks out blinds for her new condo with Kyle. And by the way, Kyle is a window blind salesman. Driving with Wendy, Wendy picks up Matt at the mall and she drives like a maniac. This would have been the scene before they pick up Barry at the dealership before he's fired. Matt then tells Wendy his plan to woo Tori, which is lying about his career. Wendy thinks that she's out of Matt's league. Barry fired after blowing the sale, which we saw in the film. Barry's boss, played by Bob Odenkirk, talks to Barry in his office about his performance. Sadly, this scene was cut because Odenkirk is hilarious as he calls Barry a pussy over and over. So are you rich? While Matt and Tori dance at the party, Tori's two superficial friends interrogate Matt about how much he earns. After proposal. So this is an alternate scene where Matt approaches Wendy, and instead of being honest, he actually congratulates Wendy and then tells Kyle that he's happy for him as well. And Kyle acts like the moron that he usually is. All right, some fun facts. So Chris Pratt and Anna Faris actually met for the first time while shooting this film. They soon became a couple and were married from 2009 to 2018, and they had a son. Believe it or not, this movie was actually filmed in 2007, but it was shelved by Universal Studios for 4 years since they didn't know how to promote a film where the main premise involved teenagers doing cocaine. Well, hello, it's the 80s. All right, there were a few alternate titles before Take Me Home Tonight was picked. Those were Young Americans and Kids in America. Take Me Home Tonight, of course, is based on the Eddie Money song, which also includes Ronnie Spector. Those other titles were Young Americans from David Bowie, and Kim Wilde did Kids in America. Being a huge fan of The Terminator from 1984 and Aliens from 1986, Topher Grace personally called Michael Biehn and offered him the role of his father. There was an extra in the party scenes with Tourette's syndrome, who would frequently yell, "Cut!" while filming scenes. Topher Grace said it happened at least 5 times. Well, someone who doesn't yell cut in this episode, and is a special guest who has been a longtime supporter of Damn Good Movie Memories, and that is Samuel Wetz. And so he joins me to talk about this film, and we have a good time doing that. And then I'll be back next week to talk about yet another random movie from my DVD collection. Okay, we're back, and we have a longtime supporter of the show, but he's a first-time guest, and that is Samuel Wetz joining me today to discuss the classic. Now, Take Me Home Tonight, not the song, but the film, and it is based on, of course, the Eddie Money song. But welcome, Samuel. Thank you for joining me, who I affectionately call my blues twin. So welcome, Samuel.
Hello, Brian. Thanks for having me here. And be my little baby. Oh, that song kept playing on my head the whole time I was watching this movie. I was like, come on, is this song going to come up? And unfortunately, no. That song's never in the movie. It's in the marketing.
I have to say, it is definitely, and it should be. I mean, what makes that song, as much as I like Eddie Money, is the Ronnie Spector chorus, you know? So when I mentioned this film to you, you had actually mentioned it was a rental that you saw. And you also said there was a cast member you were fond of. So who was it?
It was the lovely, lovely, at least she's still lovely to me, Anna Faris, who I had a massive crush for at the time. And during this time period of when I first rented it, it was probably between 2013 to 14, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. I had this period of time where I was like deep diving a bunch of people's filmographies. I did it for Rob Williams when he passed away. I did it for, I think, Jeff Bridges, I think. And mm-hmm. several people. Anna Faris was one of them. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was just like checking off all these movies that I either never heard of before or have heard of but never watched. I remember I watched all the scary movie films that she did, you know, which it was only, I think, 4 of them, if I remember correctly, that she was in. House Bunny. She did this one odd stoner film that I would need to check out because I remember not being too interested in it. Maybe I like it now, called, I think it was called Smile or Smiley or something like that.
It was a Smiley Face.
Yeah, I remember watching that, not thinking too much, but I think I would like it now. I think I would like it now. And then this film, Take Me Home Tonight. And I was, you know, and my initial thought at the time when I watched it, I was like, this is fine. This is fine. Didn't go back to it, you know, and then I just kind of forgot about it after a while. And then occasionally I'll see it pop up like on streaming services like, oh, coming soon or on new releases, Netflix, Take Me Home Tonight. I was like, maybe I should rewatch it and everything. And when you told me, hey, have you heard this movie? I was like, oh, yeah, I remember watching it. Like years ago, like a decade ago, and I must have been, well, at the time when the movie came out, I was like 10. Mm-hmm. I was 10 years old when it came out, and I must have been between 12 and 13 when I watched it as a rental. So I thought, okay, you know, I'll rewatch it. And as it is right now, I watched it twice this week, and I'm very happy to talk about this film because I do have some positive things about it. Some negatives, of course, but hey. Okay. Yeah, every film, and not every film is perfect, obviously.
Right.
So there's always going to be some negatives about it, either if it's minor or major. You know, every film is going to have a negative, you know, with it. But the positives are very positive, I have to say, you know, about the film.
So what's interesting about Anna Faris is, yeah, she was best known for those kind of the silly comedies, obviously scary movies, all of those. But what's interesting in her filmography, then you have this random serious movie. She was in Brokeback Mountain, so it's kind of random what she would appear in. So were you also a fan of the 70s show because, you know, Topher Grace being in this?
I got to be honest, Brian.
Yeah.
I am one of those few people that never really got into that show. I mean, I don't hate it. I don't hate the show at all. So some sitcoms I like, you know, like Married with Children, On the Family, Good Times, a lot of the 70s sitcoms I love.
That's the actual real 70s sitcoms. Yes.
Yep. Some of the A stuff I like as well. But then once you got into the 90s and stuff like Friends, I was like, where you could tell the audience is not really there. And it's just like a lot of canned audience. I was just like, eh. But I do respect the show. And I do know Topher Grace was from. But how I know Topher Grace was from Spider-Man 3.
As
Eddie Brock. Yep. You know, he's Venom and stuff. That's how I know him. And also, other people, like other nerds like me, know him as the guy who did the fan edit of Phantom Menace of Star Wars and stuff years ago. And this was, I don't know when was that exactly. He did like a fan edit and showed it at screens and stuff. And it's been bootlegged, you know, for years now. I haven't seen it myself. I'm curious about what he did with it. But yeah, that's how I know Topher Grace and everything.
Okay. So basically the draw to the film for you initially was like, was it the retro feel of it? Or was it just like, it seemed like a fun comedy?
When I saw it, I was like, okay, it's an 80s film. I read the description, like, okay, it looks like an 80s film. And when they even showed like a little trailer. I watched the trailer first of it. And I thought, this kind of looks like an 80s Superbad, which came out a few years before. And I love Superbad. That's like one of my favorite movies of all time.
Sure.
And everything. So I thought, okay, it's going to be like Superbad in that way. And the film's not like Superbad at all. I mean, there's not like, because there's not really any raunchy humor in it, really, I can think of. I mean, there's a couple things here and there, but overall, it's very much like you're very much a comedy. You know, you're comedy very much in kin to 80s comedies at the time, which is very much a throwback to 80s stuff, obviously. You know, like the beginning of the movie. You see this little 80s style opening credits.
Right.
With Duran Duran playing and stuff. And then there's like some point in the film where I think they forgot this was an 80s movie or like an 80s type movie. Because I thought, all right, so it's an 80s type movie. I'm expecting references. And of course, you see people dressing up and everything. Like there's this one dude. He's got like this weird, crazy hair with a bandana looking like he just came off the set of Karate Kid or something. Like doing like break dancing and stuff. That cracked me up.
Well, so I think what's interesting is, I'm glad you brought up Superbad. So this film was actually shot in 2007, but they held it for 4 years because they didn't know how to market this film because of the drug use. Because there's,
that's what I read online.
I mean, do you think this film would have done better if it was released in 2007?
I think it would have done better. Yeah. I think it would have, but also at the same time, too, we've seen this with so many films, especially in the last, I would say, 25 years, maybe 30 years, where there's these films that come out that are kind of close together, and they kind of have similar subject matters, but not like outright ripoffs, you know?
Right.
Like there's the story about The Thing, you know, when that film came out, John Carpenter's remake of The Thing.
E.T.,
you know,
yeah.
It came out with E.T., and both films have aliens, but one was more kid-friendly and stuff, or the families and kids see. The other one was more like claustrophobic and, you know, isolation and what forth and stuff.
Right. One was a friendly alien, one was definitely not. So
yeah, and you still see that it still happens now. I remember when Kick-Ass came out, like back in 2010 or something, James Gunn had a film called Super, and a lot of people thought that was a ripoff Kick-Ass. Mm-hmm. And there are similarities, of course, but both films are far different from one another. And I think maybe it could have suffered from that, but I think the film on its own definitely stands alone and without having much people to go like, oh wait, this is a rip off of this. Plus there's not that much similarities as well, either in the story or with the characters and everything. And,
right.
I mean, unless you want to count Dan Fogler's hair being similar to Jonah Hill or something.
Well, yeah. I mean, you could go with, but that's a trope throughout movies. The fat guy, the funny fat guy, you could go that route, but you know, that's in a lot of films like that. But I'm glad you brought up, like, you know, in the 80s, there was tons of those body swapping movies. So it happens. They go through these phases where there's just a lot of one, you know, particular genre. Mm-hmm. So prior to the pandemic, would you go to the theater for new releases or would you wait for cable and rentals for films?
For a long time, I always went to the theaters to check out a lot of movies. And so I always checked out a lot of movies in theaters, especially if it's a movie I love. I want to see this. I want to see this badly. I'm anticipating it. Nowadays, as I get older, you know, there's some movies that come out and go, oh, I'll check it out. Mm-hmm. You know, when it comes to rental or streaming services or what have you, I know very well my parents would not have taken me to see this movie. Oh my
right.
God. Like, there's no way. Not only my mom or dad, maybe my dad, but no way in hell my mom would have taken her 10-year-old son to see this movie just for the sake of because Anna Faris is in it. I think she's hot.
Right. So what, you know? what's your mom's go-to genre?
Oh God, my mom loves a lot of different movies too. So it's like really hard to say what would be her go-to, man.
But not something like this.
Right. I mean, well, she did actually watch this.
No.
Because I did end up seeing her watch it briefly. Maybe it was like last year or maybe. I know it was not that long ago because there's a certain point in the movie that I was like, why does it feel like this is so familiar? And I thought, oh, my mom was watching this. Mm. And she was watching it for the same reason. She saw if Anna Faris was in it. She's like, oh, I like Anna Faris. I'm going to watch this movie. And I was like, oh, Mom, you're watching this movie? She's like, yeah. What do you think, Mom? I don't like it.
So what's interesting is watching this film now, the biggest name by far is Chris Pratt.
Yes.
But back in 2011, he wasn't as well known. This is a supporting role for him. Mm-hmm. I don't think based on this role, we could have guessed that he would become one of the biggest top box office draws. So how did you feel about him being in this film?
Oh, I enjoyed him. I enjoyed him tremendously because I thought – he plays such a good douchebag, but also like a dumb douchebag type of character. And he kind of played a character similar to that in, and I forget when that film came out. I think he was in the film Wanted for like a brief, like brief stuff in there, which that's a good movie, by the way. If you've ever seen it, Wanted, really good movie with Angelina Jolie, James McAvoy, I think is in there too.
Morgan Freeman. Yeah.
Yeah, he's in there. He's kind of playing a kind of similar type dude in that. But I enjoyed them in the scene. And I couldn't be wrong, but I did hear a story that the cast on his arm was actually not in the script. That was actually something that happened to him in real life, and they just added that on in the film. You know, I have seen that happen before with, like, some actors that have, like, an accident or something. I know William Forsythe, when he did Rob Zombie's Halloween remake, like, he's all kind of bandaged up and cast. And that's because he was, like, in some hiking accident before.
Yeah.
added that into the script.
That actually happened with Corey Haim in Dream a Little Dream. He had hurt his leg, and that's why they added it into the script where he has the character has a broken leg. That definitely happens. Okay, so I know you're a huge fan of nostalgia, just like I was as a kid. This is why we're good friends. You're a 2000s kid. What was your favorite decade, or what is your favorite decade to indulge in movie-wise when it comes to nostalgia, even if it was before you were born?
Oh, God, man, that's actually a really good question, actually. It kind of fluctuates sometimes, you know. I would say at the moment is probably late 80s, early 90s type of films at the moment. But, I mean, guys, man, there's, like, so many good decades of films out there. I mean, not even just, like, from, like, 50s through on. Like, even the silent films, I think, are really, really good, and I've been really fascinated with that. And just recently, I've been there's a YouTube channel I'm subscribed to that kind of puts up these public domain or like these old school 1950s films that not a lot of people know about and everything. Like, I watched this one film from 1955, 56 called The Beast with a Million Eyes or something like that, which was one of the first films that Roger Corman did.
Yeah.
You know, and when he was just starting, it was like maybe like the fourth film he did, fourth or fifth film, and I really dug it, you know? So I would say at the moment, my nostalgia kind of films are like the 90s and stuff, because I would say borderline, I'm very much a 90s kid, very much a 90s kid, you know? Even though I was born in 2001.
Right.
I'm very much more leaning towards the 90s films and 90s music and stuff like that. But, I mean, the 80s had a lot of great films. Of course, there's a lot of great classics. Hell, my all-time favorite movie is RoboCop, the original film.
Really?
Like, that is my all-time favorite movie. Not a lot of people know that, by the way. Not a lot of people know that. I don't really say that often. And when I do, people are like, no way, bro, dude, no way.
Did you like the remake at all?
To this day, I've never seen it.
Okay.
I'm one of those guys. I was like, no. Yeah. Kind of like how you were with the Blues Brothers sequel. Oh. You're like, no.
Yeah.
No.
I did see it, but it was awful. But the music was all right. But yeah, I've refused.
My condolences, sir.
I actually saw it in the movie theater. That's how bad it was. I'm the same way with any remake like Footloose and The Karate Kid and things like that. It's not worth it. So.
Oh yeah. I saw the Footloose remake. Did I see that in theaters? I'm like, no, I saw it on cable. That was horrible.
Yeah.
That was horrible.
Going back to Take Me Home Tonight, there really isn't, I would say, a plot to this film. It kind of harkens back to those fun high school party films of the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But do you like that this film is essentially a series of vignettes in one night?
Yeah, I actually enjoy that. And, well, actually, I want to point this out, too. I love the fact that the film doesn't really overstay its welcome.
Yeah.
It's, like, only an hour and 37 minutes. And I actually paused it because I was curious, like, okay, how long? Because as soon as the credits were rolling, I was like, okay, let me see. Hour and 31 minutes is exactly. As soon as the credits start rolling, it's only an hour and 31 minute movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you take out the opening credits, it's probably less than that. It's probably like maybe hour 20 something minutes, if anything.
Yeah.
And I love that. You know, it to me, I think it's well paced for the most part. And yeah, it doesn't really have much of a story other than like a guy's high school crush and everything. Mm-hmm. He wants to, you know, get her phone number and stuff and everything, maybe, you know, this and that. And then he has to lie, say, oh, I work at a bank in California and stuff. And then Gun Guy's like, dude, I work at this thing. There's no division here. You know, I love that, by the way. I love that when the guy says, like, dude, everybody knows that there's no whatever he says. Like, there's no division here. Everybody knows that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that so much. That cracked me up every time they brought it up. For the most part, you know, sometimes it can be hit and miss depending on what the film is, but I thought this did it very well.
Yeah, and it's not meant to be heavy or anything like that. It's just a fun film. So what about, you had mentioned this, so you watched it twice recently. What about the film holds up for you? And then what about it would you have changed, you know, based on, you know, when you watch it the first time as opposed to now?
Well, that's a really good question. That's what you do. That's why you were the smart one, my friend. That's why you were the smart one. the thing that still holds up about the film is the humor. I got a lot of laughs at the movie. Of course, there's some parts I just went, okay, that's very, you know, of the time, or very like, okay, that didn't really land too much. But a lot of the laughs I got was from Dan Fogler. I think that's his name, Fogler, and Chris Pratt.
Yep.
You know, which I gotta mention this. Every time Dan Fogler popped up on screen, you know, I kept thinking of him as the guy from the Typo Negative video for I Don't Want to Be Me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know if you've ever seen that, Brian.
No.
The video, he's like, he dresses up like Marilyn Monroe, Eminem, Britney Spears. And the whole time, I'm just thinking of that the whole time of this movie. I was like, that's the dude who dresses like Peter Steele and starts rocking at the end of the video.
That's hilarious. I had no idea because I know him from Good Luck Chuck. He plays Dane Cook's buddy, but that's
funny.
Yeah,
he was in there's another movie he did too that was, I think it came around the same time in the 2000s. What's it called? Balls of Fire? I'm probably remembering the title.
Oh, yeah. Was it Ping Pong or something like that? Or
something like that.
Yeah, something.
I remember him from that as well, but I always know him as the guy from that Typo Negative video. And
that's
stuff.
Hilarious.
But yeah, I thought he, out of everybody in the cast,
he
was my favorite part of the movie. Especially the fact that, you know, when he's like, he's like walking to the girls' car, he's like, oh, it looks like I'm going to be riding with you girls to the house and everything, to the Beverly Hills party. And they're like, dude, no, ew. And he's like, I got a bag of Coke. And he's like, all right, get in.
Yeah, exactly. Amazing.
And then when he gets all coked up and stuff, he's just like rubbing his nose and stuff. And when he has like the break dance, and the guy's like break dance, and he's just like not even trying to dance. He's just doing weird moves. And then it just ends up with kicking the dude's balls twice.
Right.
When it comes to stuff I would change.
Yeah.
Maybe the only thing I would change, and it's no hate towards him. I do like Topher Grace a lot.
Sure.
You know, but there's times where I kind of feel like, I mean, could he really been this guy? I mean, I could see somebody else playing this role. I don't know. You know, that's just me. I also know he has a story credit. You know, he has a co story credit.
Go write it. You know, yeah.
Which I was like, it's like kind of given the obligation to be the lead in this film. So, but I don't know. I mean, there really isn't much I could change because I thought, like I said, I thought it was well paced. Mm-hmm. You know, it has a good beginning, middle, and end. You know, it's not really. I mean, there's some things about it that I would just go, that just maybe on a personal level, that I just maybe go, dude, you're digging the hole deeper. You're digging the hole deeper with your lies. Just be honest with the girl. Just say you work at the video store. I just kept going that the whole time, and also there was times too where he was saying stuff. I was like, oh my god, that is so me. But not in a hilarious way, in like a embarrassing way too. I was like, oh god, I'm Topher Grace in this movie. But
well, that's yeah. I'm glad you brought up the like who that was one of my questions of the cast, who would you have changed. And so did you think about who would you rather have as Topher Grace in that role, like if you could at that time, like who would what maybe would have been Jonah Hill, maybe would have been Seth Rogen? I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, there was a lot of actors that you could have seen this role. But also there's some ones I'll go, well, that would just kind of be typecasting as well. If anything, if like you were telling me right now, just like pick a brand name. I don't know, James Franco or something. I don't know, man. It's a I don't know who you would have cast other than that. I mean, that is a good question because I would have to look back at who was big at the time, especially at the time of the filming, of course, in, 2007.
Yeah.
I had to think of that. But, you know, but I thought, besides my complaint about Topher Grace and everything, I thought he was kind of hit and miss with the humor as well.
Sure.
I thought he did fine in the role. I thought he was a good lead for the most part, you know, and I thought the actress, I'm forgetting her name too.
Oh, Teresa Palmer. Yeah.
Oh my God. Teresa Palmer. Don't get me started. All right. Anywho, I thought she was really good in the film as well. I thought her performance was stellar. I thought she had a, you know, she played a good, like California girl, real nice, but in a small role, you have the lovely Michelle Trachtenberg as this
kind of right.
like this gothic kind of stoner chick. And every time they kind of cut to a shot of the crowd, you see her with the apple and the lighter.
Oh yeah.
And every time it happened, I just kept cracking up every time she just held the lighter and the apple and everything. And she doesn't have many lines in it. She's just kind of like just there as almost like a borderline cameo, which there aren't borderline cameos in this film. You know, you have like, Bob Odenkirk, who really I don't think says anything in the film. You just see him like looking at, you know, Dan Fogler's character, pointing at him, and that's it.
Yep. And of course Angie Everhart, who has a fun scene in the film. But Michelle Trachtenberg, she's best known for Eurotrip.
Yes, Eurotrip, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I believe she was in.
Absolutely.
Harriet the Spy when she was like a wee girl.
Yep.
And stuff. I also know her as she's a massive cat lady too.
Yes,
that's how I know her as well on social media. She loves posting her little black and white cat online.
So in addition to loving your cats, and of course you have Susie Taco is one of your cats, which we
love. I know she's your favorite, Brian. I know she's your favorite.
The other thing you love is music, and so I would say the music in this film is a little all over the place for the 80s.
Which is one of my complaints.
So get into that. What are some of the standout tracks that you enjoy?
Oh man, I mean, there was a song that instantly comes to mind. I sent to you earlier is the song you hear in the opening credits, which is Duran Duran's "Hungry Like the Wolf."
Mm-hmm.
That is one of my not only one of my favorite 80s hits. That's one of my favorite songs of all time.
Wow,
I love that song, and I love the album Rio and stuff. And Duran kind of gets that rep of like kind of the they're cheesy, you know this, but they're actually great songwriters, you know. And I've always pointed out to the Wedding album as one of my ultimate. I love the Rio album, but I would say the Wedding album is probably close to be my favorite Duran Duran album. Hell, Ordinary World is my favorite song of theirs, and
That
song is absolutely fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would song would stand out. You have Radio Kill, Video
The Buggles. Kill.
Yes, yeah, that song in there. You have Betty Davis Size.
Yeah, Kim Carnes.
Which I kept thinking of you, by the way. I kept thinking, because there's an inside joke that me and Brian have because I posted a picture. I think you're either you or I posted a picture of Pepper Keenan from Corrosion of Conformity. And you said something like, he's got pepper keen eyes.
Oh, that's right.
or something like that. And I just kept thinking you, and I kept thinking Pepper Keenan as freaking Betty Davis as was playing. But the thing with the soundtrack, though, and this kind of goes for as a general thing with movies, is a lot of the songs I felt were kind of just like a needle drop, like, hey, remember this song? Hey, remember this? And everything. And some of them worked, some of them didn't. You know, the scene with when NWA Straight Outta Compton, when they go to the car dealership to get to steal the car, and he's trying to get the security code right, and he's like, they fucking changed it. they're smart. They knew they had one step ahead of me. And you just hear the song kicking in, and you're frantically get hauling ass out of there, and the song playing. And then as they leave the dealership, they just start singing along to it. Not exactly singing along to it. They're just like mouthing it. Because I don't know how some people would feel about two white guys singing some of those words.
Well, of course.
But back to what I was saying, sometimes with movie soundtracks, when you use like licensed music and stuff, sometimes like certain directors like Quentin Tarantino or Martin Scorsese or Richard Linklater, they'll have songs that kind of fit the theme of the scene or fit the theme of the movie. Or in this case, you're putting songs that more akin to like they're more like fitting the era and stuff.
That's right.
And everything, which, hey, it's great. You know, it's great, of course. But there's times where I'm just like, do you really need to put this song here? Like, does you really need to have a song play in the background? I mean, at the party scenes, of course, you're going to have some music playing. Yeah, but there's some stuff I was like, man, you really didn't really need to play that song.
Well, I know some people get upset with timeline. So this movie is supposed to take place in 1988. Well, then you have Kickstart My Heart from Motley Crue. Yeah. Well, that didn't come out to 89. So some people get upset with stuff like that.
Yeah, that's also the thing I also noticed, too, because I don't think they really – I mean, of course, I think they do specify what year. But sometimes I'm just like – sometimes I kind of have a hard time with some movies when they say, oh, this takes place in this year, but then you have this song playing. Like,
right.
I think they just more said it takes place in the 80s.
It's like the Goldbergs.
The Goldbergs. Like the Goldbergs. Good, great example. You know, it doesn't specify what year exactly. You could, if you hear something, it's like, oh, it must be 83 because they're playing, I don't know, Bark at the Moon from Ozzy or something.
Right.
Or, hey, it's 1986 or 1985 because there's a Back to the Future poster or something.
Sure. So what are your final thoughts after watching this? Would you revisit this, or is this something like, no, this is good, but, you know, if it's on cable every now and then, I might check it out.
I'm more leaning towards definitely giving this a rewatch, you know, definitely giving this one, but I don't think I'm going to watch it as frequently as something like other films that I love, you know.
Like Superbad.
I mean, but I will say, though, my opinion of the film definitely is a lot more positive than what I initially thought, you know, a decade ago, you know, where I was kind of like, this is fine, you know.
Well, and what's what's interesting is maybe because of the lack of decent comedies in today's films, like new comedies, you go back to something like this that you might not have thought it was great at the time, but then you're watching movies now and you're like, actually, this isn't that bad, especially what they put out today. So.
Oh yeah, yeah, and especially the comedies nowadays, and there's some of these comedies that come out that I enjoy, but there's some comedies that I just feel get way too repetitive and seem more like improvisational heavy, which and no disrespect to this director, I'm a fan of this director up to a point, but Judd Apatow really popularized that a lot, and a lot of his films that did it worked with it, of course. But then you have a film like Trainwreck with Amy Schumer, which I thought that film was terrible. I didn't like that film at all. You know, and that film just seemed very improv heavy. You're like, it didn't seem like none of the jokes landed. You're like, hey, it's funny, it's work, it's Amy Schumer, or hey, it's Bill Hader, or whatever.
Right.
Put it in the movie. And also the fact, too, a lot of the movies, and I think even you pointed this out to me in a personal text or a conversation we had, where you're like, man, some of these comedies just go on way too long. Like, do we need a 2-hour comedy? No.
Yeah, I mean, and that's Judd Apatow's specialty. So.
Oh, yeah. And a lot of his movies are like close to an hour 40, hour 50 minutes. And
yeah,
hey, some of it works. And then some of it, I'm just like, could you not make this an hour and 35 minutes, Judd?
You look at the best comedies, and Blues Brothers notwithstanding, because Blues Brothers is also a musical, so you can't, as funny it is as it is, a lot of that time is taken up by actual performances. But when you think Airplane and Naked Gun and Caddyshack and Vacation, I mean, they're 90 minutes. It's 90 minutes, maybe a little bit over, but not much.
Yeah, or less than that. There's like some films where like hour 20 minutes or something. Sure. Absolutely. Like, I think I could be wrong, but I think the first Vacation is like not even like an hour and a half. It's like maybe hour and 20 something, maybe.
That
something
one's like over that. An hour and a half, but like I think like Airplane is like 85 minutes or something like that.
You know? So it shows you like you don't have to have a movie be 2 hours to be good. You know, some movies don't have to be like one of my favorite movies of all time, not a comedy. Well, in some ways, it's a comedy. Evil Dead. The first Evil Dead is like an hour and 20 minutes.
Well, good editing. Good editing means a lot. So
yeah, editing shows, and it shows you, you know, you don't have, and also pacing as well. You know, cutting the fat and making sure you have like a good, well-paced movie and a story where it doesn't have to be super long. Like the movie, the story of Take Me Home Tonight doesn't need to be 2 hours long. You know. And the story's not that convoluted. You know, it's a story that everybody, I think, can relate to in some way. You know, Dan Fogler got a lot of laughs out of me.
Yeah.
Lot of laughs out of me. He, to me, like I said, my favorite part of the movie. And I was basically wanting to go watch a bunch of his movies. And he's done a lot of different stuff after this.
Yeah.
Like he was in, when I was looking up some information about this stuff, I saw he was in a Harry Potter movie or something. I was like, what? God damn, good for him. He's doing great stuff. And of course, Topher Grace is doing well. And of course, Chris Pratt, you know, megastar now. Yep. Megastar. And good for him. You know, I thought he was good in the film and stuff. And I got a funny story about him, if you don't mind me sharing.
Yeah, go ahead.
There was a guy I was a fan of who he's like this movie journalist dude. And he went to the interview junket for Take Me Home Tonight. And as he's walking out, Chris Pratt's coming in. I guess they had this interview junket in a house for using one of the movies, or maybe I think it was that main house that they go to where his party's at. They use for interviews. And as he's Chris Pratt's walking in, this guy is coming out, and they bump into each other. And Chris was like, "Oh my god, dude, I'm so sorry." He's like, "Oh man, it's okay." He's like, "No." It's like, "If you want to, man, punch me right in the face, right here. Punch me right in the face." Like, Chris Pratt was willing to let this dude punch him in the face. He's like, "No, dude, it's okay. I'm not mad. It was an accident. It's all good. I'm not going to punch your face." He's like, "No, man, no, you need to, man. You should." He's like, I should have been paying attention as you were walking out. that shows you Chris Pratt's not, like, he's actually genuinely doing, not this dumb douchebag and he's in this film.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I've always heard good things about him too. Like you rarely hear negative press about him, which I think is cool. But Samuel, thank you for doing this. But I want you to give a plug for your radio show. You are now on every Friday on Cranium Radio. So what are the times you're on CraniumRadio.com?
Yes, I have my show on CraniumRadio.com, which is a great station. You know, it counts as rock and roll, but it's also just an all music station as well,
right?
And everything. And I do a 5-hour show from 3 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 to 7 p.m. Central Time, and I'm trying to remember Pacific Time.
Noon to 5, I guess.
Yeah, or maybe 1 to yeah 1 to, maybe 1 noon to 6. 5.
Noon to
yeah,
5.
Maybe, yeah, yeah, maybe that too. I need to recheck. I should have been more prepared about that, sir. But yeah, I do. I pretty much play all types of music on my show, of course, rock and metal and stuff like that.
Sure.
And I have a block in the middle called the FIA block. You can take a guess what that means.
Yep. Right. We came up with that, but when we used to be co-headliners on thatmetalstation.com, and
yes, sir.
Samuel liked to play a random block of whatever he wanted, and so we affectionately called it the FIA block.
That block only existed because I literally had like a little blockage in my brain. I didn't know what to play. I was like, screw it, I'm just gonna play just a bunch of random stuff. We're gonna play Beastie Boys Bee Gees, whatever. Just fucking, that's what I said. Fuck it. This is the fucking block. I think that's what I said. And you enjoyed it so much. You're like, dude, you got to do that for next week. I was like, well, okay.
It's great. Like, it really is all over the place. And it's a lot of fun because not that like the theme blocks aren't fun, but it's like sometimes you just want to hear a random set of whatever. And Samuel, even though he's in his early 20s, he has such a wealth of knowledge when it comes to music. And obviously you heard about movies. So again, you know, it kind of reminds me of when I was his age. So I think this is a lot of fun. There's hope for the next generations, I feel. So thank you, Samuel.
Hey, you're welcome, Brian. Hey, thanks for having me on here, man, because I'm glad that I rewatched this movie, and I think I found a great, you know, great appreciation for it. And hey, maybe after the show, I might just go, oh, you know what? This is actually my favorite movies of the 2010s. Maybe. I don't know. I watched it twice, and I did find, you know, some great appreciation for it. And, you know, I also want to point out to you, biggest sin ever, not putting that goddamn Eddie Money song in the movie.
Agreed. I agree.
I'm just like, if you're going to name, this is another critique I have. If you're going to name a movie after a song, at least put the song in the movie.
100%. And I think I'm pretty sure there's other examples of that too, where maybe they didn't get the rights to it. Yeah.
Oh yeah, or like it was like the licensing fee was ridiculous. I know Kevin Smith did that he had a movie called Tusk, and he used the song Tusk for Fleetwood Mac, and he said that song, he's like, most of the budget went over to that song alone.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm like, yep. I can imagine.
But yeah, and people don't think about that. I mean, it really does cost a lot of money to.
Especially depending on who the band is too. I mean, Christ. That's Led Zeppelin. Led Zeppelin's ridiculous when it comes to the fees.
That's right. So never make a movie called Stairway to Heaven, because that ain't happening.
Yes, else people are going to get mad at you, and they're going to say, what's the song? Like, I can't afford it. I have all three members approve, and if they don't all approve, no song.
No song. Thank you again, Samuel.
All right, you're welcome, Brian, and take care, my friend. You rock, and the show rocks too. Love, Dan, good movie memories.
If you enjoy this podcast and are an iTunes user, please do the show a favor and head on over to the official iTunes page for Damn Good Movie Memories. Be sure to leave a rating and a review. This will allow the show to appear higher in the algorithm and spread the joy of this podcast to the masses. If you are not an iTunes user, you can still listen and subscribe on Podbean at damngoodmoviememories.podbean.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook under our Damn Good Movie Memories page. You can also listen to a limited number of episodes on YouTube. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode, and be sure to tune in next week for an all-new episode of Damn Good Movie Memories.